Yeah. All right, and then what? It'll be clear by the end of the seminar.
Yeah, if God had his way, but if God's will, I'd love to support ministry.
No kidding. Well, I got a place in Africa you can go to. They love that. Yeah. Okay. That's the ministry no. Yeah, yeah, awesome. Well, welcome. We're gonna dive into this whole topic of sustainable youth ministry. Just a quick summary of what we're talking about when we talk about sustainable youth ministry. Most of us have been in places where we saw a ministry that after a particular youth worker left, everything fell apart. And in fact, a lot of times those youth workers felt really, you know, like that was a good thing. Like I was doing such a good job, they couldn't live without me. And in fact, what we want to talk about here is how do we build a ministry that thrives beyond our tenure there? How do we build a foundation that is not just about creating something, inflating a ministry as opposed to growing a ministry, but inflating and growing a ministry around, not just around us, but with appropriate systems and structures. And so just by way of context, you know, when Paul says in 2 Corinthians, we have this treasure. What comes next? In jars of clay and earthen vessels, right? I just have to confess on the front end, I would much rather be talking about the treasure than about the jar. But today we're talking about the jar. This is a jar seminar. And it's clay. And the stuff we're going to talk about, it will pass away. It is contextual to right now. There's no problem with the treasure. The treasure is doing just fine. The gospel is the power of God for salvation. The gospel works just fine. There's a problem with our delivery system, though, and especially as it comes to our delivery system related to the next generation. So that's kind of what we're going to be focusing on. And just want to say what we all know, which is this ain't treasure. It'll be fun. But it's not the treasure. So let's pray and we'll get started. Lord, we are grateful for the privilege of being the clay pots that bear the treasure. We pray that we'd be faithful in doing that. More faithful because we spent this little time together in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, as we organize our time together, I sort of have two movements. The first movement, the key word is going to be stuck. What is it that keeps ministry stuck, keeps youth ministries particularly stuck? And I figure if we can identify what some of those are, then we can move beyond those. And the second movement is, how do we move towards sustainability, or how do we create systems that move us toward sustainability? So we're going to walk through those things, and just got a few pictures of stuck things that I like. This is nice. What you notice her expression? What does that tell you? It ain't her car, right? Right. Okay, check this one out. Is this a great picture? I love this picture. You got a little 8-year-old boy stuck his head through the back of a chair. There's the lunch lady, the principal, the janitor, and the maintenance guy with the hacksaw 3 inches from the kid's head. Is that awesome? Little lollipop in his mouth. Nice picture of stuck. I love it. You know you're in a stuck ministry if the answers to all your problems start with the words, "we just." You ever been in a situation where people come up to you in your ministry and they say, "You know, we just need to..." What kind of things do they say?
"Have the parents do a better job."
If we just get those parents to get off their tail and finally be spiritual instead of pagan, then we would not have a problem, right? If we just could redecorate the youth room, get some cool posters and stuff... If we just had a youth room, if we could renovate some space or build a youth building, that would solve it. I had an elder in my church come up to me at a time of great stuckness, about 5 years into my ministry, and the elder said, You know, I think what we need to do? Get more cute boys and cute girls. I think we're good. We just need to get more cute. Forget the ugly ones. Just go after the cute ones. We're going to be fine. I love this line. For every problem, there's a solution which is simple, neat, and wrong. And unfortunately, a lot of what happens in the world of youth ministry is a simple answer to a system question. So let's just think systems here for just a second. What are some of the systems of the body? Endocrine, that was strong, bold. Cardiovascular, nice. Muscular, mm-hmm. Digestive, mm-hmm. Skeletal, you get the idea. Okay, the body is a system of systems. And okay, let's just say, tell me your name. Okay, let's just say Chris. Chris, what do you think is the most important part of the digestive system to you? What do you think matters the most?
The mouth.
I know what you were about to say. But let's just say Chris goes for... Okay, one end of the spectrum or the other is where Chris is headed, okay? So let's just say we're going with the mouth. As Chris says, that's the most important thing. So let's just say Chris has this just extraordinary, superlative oral hygiene. And he is so taken care of his mouth. In fact, his tongue has 10 times more taste receptors than any normal human. It's unbelievable the way he has developed the skills of his mouth. They're so nuanced. I mean, he can taste something and name, there's some thyme in there. And, there's a little bit of parsley. And I think there's a dash of... Okay, he's got all this incredible ability with his tongue. He's so good at the eating, and his teeth are strong. And unbelievable the way he takes care of this sort of oral hygiene. Now, of course, the esophagus, he doesn't really spend much time there. And unfortunately, it's sort of like swallowing razor blades every time he swallows. His esophagus is not doing well. And his stomach, the enzymes are sort of backwards. They're not doing so well. The intestines are sort of inside out. And that whole exit process is totally clogged. It's not working. Now, he's a gold medalist in terms of oral hygiene. You line up a million people, he's number one. He's the head of the line, gold medalist. He's got the best oral hygiene in the world. What difference does it make? Zero. Most churches focus on a single piece of the system, and they assume that's going to solve their problem. I'm just all for, let's have a moderately gifted every piece of the system and let it work together. We'll be a lot better off than a superstar. If you've seen the movie Moneyball, it's the same point. It's an incredible movie, actually. So the most important part of the digestive system is the system, right? It's the system working together. And unfortunately, most of us get really obsessively focused on, if we get a student leadership program, that's going to solve our youth group. Oh, if we can get volunteers doing their thing, woo-hoo. If we can finally get a decent curriculum, all we need is more NUMA, and we're going to be golden. Okay? The truth is, it's all a part of the system. Now, in stuck churches, there are four questions that get asked all the time. Here's the first one. Can you just give us some good ideas? Let me give you some good news. You don't need any more ideas. You got plenty of ideas. In fact, they don't even have to be good. All you have to do is have a lousy idea well executed. Sometimes we're sort of obsessively focused on finding what's the new thing, what's the cutting edge, what's the new... We have this thing in Nashville called the Boulevard Bolt, a 5-mile run on Thanksgiving morning designed to raise money for the homeless. Can you imagine the folks sitting around the table that were deciding to do this? Somebody said, I have an idea. How about we get people together on Thanksgiving morning at 8 o'clock and have them pay $50 a piece and we'll do a 5-mile run? What do you think people said? It'll never work. How come? It's Thanksgiving. It's family time. Nobody's going to come. And 5 miles. That's a minor detail, right? But now after 10 or 15 years, they have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for homeless ministry. Over 10,000 people come out every Thanksgiving morning. It's an event because somebody took a lousy idea and implemented it well. I live in Nashville, Tennessee, the home of country music. I know about people becoming rich off of lousy ideas. Now, I love country music, but I'm just telling you, lyrics like, "You're the reason our kids are ugly, little darling." I mean, that is actually song lyrics somebody wrote, put them out there. And somebody's making money off of that. Lousy ideas, well implemented, are better than searching around for the holy grail of the best idea. In a stuck church, you're going to hear people say, "Don't you understand how different we are? See, we're special." Now, it's not so true with Baptists as it is with Episcopalians, but most churches will say, "You don't understand, we're special, we're different." And we have this little organization called Youth Ministry Architects, and we do these assessments with churches. We've done about 250 of these in churches around the country over the last 10 years. And in almost every one, we hear people say stuff like this: "You don't understand. See, in our church, our kids, they're really busy." That is special. Yeah. You don't understand. See, in our church, the parents, it's crazy. They just drop their kids off. They like don't get involved. In our church, now here's one that's really special. People don't sign up for stuff. Like it takes them forever to RSVP. In our church, kids are from all kind of different schools. You don't understand. We're different. In our church, it's like the... I don't understand it. I mean, it's the weirdest thing. In our city, on Sunday mornings, they play soccer. You don't understand. We're different. Now, your church probably does have about 10% weirdness. Pure weirdness. And I bless you to have your weirdness. Claim that as your own. But all those other things, those are not special. I call it the trap of terminal uniqueness. We think we're really different, and so we explain away less than thriving program based on issues that every thriving ministry in the country has to deal with. So when you find yourself saying, "You don't understand, we're really different," you may just be stuck. Okay, here's another one. "Would you help my church understand it's not about numbers?" When you're stuck, the youth pastor's saying, "Hey, it's not about numbers, okay?" You'll know you're stuck. Now, let me just say, I'm a little bit of an iconoclast in this, but I just believe... I just believe we are not terribly faithful with our numbers sometimes as youth pastors. And sometimes we over-spiritualize it, like, you know, all the pastor cares about is numbers. I care about kids. Well, let me tell you, if you're a shepherd and you don't know how many sheep you've got, you are not a great shepherd. And don't claim yourself as somebody that knows about sheep. You don't care about sheep. You just care about doing what you want to do. I'm sorry, I've been a little personal there. So let me give you a little parable. Parable of something that didn't happen but should have. So I got these three babies. Take them to Disney World. Adam, Debbie, and Lee. Let's just say Adam is 16 at the time. I say, y'all be back at the flagpole at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock comes. Susan's there. Debbie's there. Lee's there. No Adam. I say to Susan, "Baby, it's 9 o'clock. It's about time for us to go." What does Susan say? "Not without Adam." And I say, "Honey, whoa. We have two very quality children. Let's just work with the ones that come." And she says, "Well, sweetheart, we have three children." I say, "Oh, why are you so obsessed with numbers?" And she would say, "Because that third one happens to be ours." Now, whatever your tradition is in terms of what you do, most of our churches, when babies are born, welcomed into the life of the church, a lot of our churches, we hold that baby up front. The congregation essentially says, I mean, it's not like the pastor goes to the house and blesses the baby. Baby is held up front. We say, "Dibs on the baby. That one's ours." And that one's ours, not... It doesn't mean that one's ours if she doesn't get pregnant at 12 and then she doesn't feel comfortable coming to church. She's not ours anymore because, you know, if she doesn't show up for 2 or 3 years, just purge the rolls. We need to get this dead weight off the rolls. You ever heard that? You know, some people proudly say, "You know what? If somebody doesn't come for a year, we take them off. It's not my job to shepherd them anymore if they don't show up." Really? It's a different idea of shepherding. We can all define who is ours and who's not ours. I'm not suggesting that how you do that. I'm just suggesting it's essentially a numbers issue. We got to know how many babies we got. And I've been amazed at the churches we've done assessments in, how few of them can answer that question clearly. How many kids you got?
Well, what do you mean, kids?
I don't care. What you define them however you want. How many you got? Well, somewhere between 50 and like 600. We have it on Shelby, you know, and it's in the database. But some of those kids are like from Des Moines and came to the lock-in 4 years ago. And I don't know. A shepherd that doesn't know how many sheep they've got is maybe not a great shepherd. So I want to just suggest this whole polarizing conversation about it's not about numbers, it is about numbers, is part of the victim mentality that youth ministry has grown up in. Nobody understands me. All the church wants is hung. I'm the run of the litter. Nobody respects me. I got to tell you, we can be victims or we can be architects. But if we are the ones managing and being aware of the... there are stupid numbers. How many kids does Doug Fields have in his church? I don't care. That's not an important number for me. But how many kids am I responsible for? How many kids didn't show up in the last month that I need to follow? Probably pretty important question. How many visitors have I had and how many times have I... Those are pretty important questions. Here's the last one. Can you help me get out of these political games? Again... This is a stance of the victim. The victim says, "You don't understand, man. My church, there's all this church politics." You know, that's going to be pretty universal, right? Let's just say Chris again comes to now here in Louisville. Is there like an arena, like if you have a big concert or something like that? That is, what is it?
The Yum Center.
Yum.
Yum. Yum Brands.
Okay.
KFC.
Okay, so the Yum Center. Beautiful. I love that. So tonight, I don't know if you know this, but Chris is going to be at the Yum Center, and it's a big boxing match. And actually, Chris, will you do this for me? Will you go over there? Chris is going to act this out for me. Chris is going to step into the center ring, all right? So come on in, Chris. Killer Chris, here he is. All right? The crowd is going crazy. Here he comes, and he comes in the ring. He climbs over into the ring.
Am I in the ring right now?
No, you got to climb over the rope. Okay, or under. That's okay. That's okay too. Okay, and then you're kind of working the crowd a little bit. Yeah, show him your stuff. That's good. All right. Then he takes off his shiny bathrobe that says Killer Chris. Yeah, and people go crazy. Yeah. Okay. And so he's working the crowd. Are you loving this? How are you liking it? Yeah, he's loving it. Man, he's just in the honeymoon, right? And all of a sudden, he looks across the ring, and there is Mike Tyson. And Chris says, just before the bell rings, Chris crosses his arms. Chris, cross your arms. And he says, "I don't play boxing games." Go ahead.
"I don't play boxing games."
Bing! The bell rings. What happens? He's done, right? Okay, great job, Chris. That was awesome. Now, most of us love the idea of stepping into the ring. Woohoo! I got hired to be the youth pastor. Woohoo! This is awesome. And then... when somebody expects us to do our job, which is to advocate for the youth ministry, which will always be an uphill climb, there's always going to be some resistance. And as Troy said today, or Jim, or somebody said today, there is a target that the enemy has on your head and your heart. For us to think, "Oh, you know, I don't play political games." That is the reason why so many youth ministries are under-resourced, is because we don't learn how to, all we do is learn how to whine. We go, "Well, listen, you know, it's just a bunch of politics." You know what the word politics is next to in the dictionary? Polite. It's all about being polite. If I do a sex talk with my junior high kids and they ask a bunch of explicit questions and I don't call my pastor the night before he comes to work, it's not polite. How come? People are going to call him. He will get ambushed. There's only one creature in the universe that is more unhappy with surprises than horses, and that is senior pastors. They do not respond well to sort of these attacks that come because of something we did. It's just about being polite. In every congregation, there's a secret stairway to getting things done. There are certain people you have to talk to, no matter what the bylaws say, no matter what the book says. There are certain people you got to talk to. You put your arm around them. You say, "I need your help on something. This is something I feel like God's called me to do. Can you give me some advice on how we do that?" That's not sneaky, passing money under the table in a smoky room. It's just doing your job. And part of what you've been paid to do is to be the advocate for youth ministry in your church. If you want to stay stuck, just say, "I don't play politics." What you're saying is, "I don't do leadership." Because every church of, actually, I was going to say every church of more than two people, but you know that story of the guy that was on a desert island and he was rescued and he had built three structures. First one, you know, people say, what are these? He said, well, this is my house. This is where I live. Oh, that makes sense. Well, what's this one? That's my church. That's where I worship. I said, what's this one? That's the church I used to go to. It doesn't take much, right? Okay, here we go. Let me see. I got a little clip here. Let's see if it's going to work. I'm going to see if I can get a little volume. Can you hear that?
Whoa, that's not good.
Oh, I don't need this. I'm already late.
Somebody will come. Anybody out there?
Do you have a phone?
No. Sorry. Somebody! Hello? There are two people stuck on an escalator and we need help. Now, would somebody please do something?
Help!
I don't believe this. You gotta be kidding me.
I'm gonna cry.
Well, there's nothing else left to do.
Hello? Hey, don't worry about it. I'll fix it in a second.
He said he can fix it. All right. That's more like it. He says he can fix it.
Okay, implications for our ministries. If it's not obvious. Implications for our ministries. Don't just stand there. There's a certain way that it used to work. And when that way doesn't work anymore, now, here's the deal. When Wayne Rice started doing youth ministry, if you did a burger bash, you'd have kids come out from everywhere. All you got to do is put out food. Kids will be there. When Jim came along, all you got to do is put out pizza. Kids will be there. We hand out trips to Hawaii and it's hard, right? Sometimes we think, you know, if it's not working the way it used to, what I need to do is sit here and see if somebody, if it'll magically get better. Well, chances are not so much. As I suggested this morning in the panel, I believe we've got to stop thinking about models that are permanent solutions and think about the laboratory and recognize, like Wayne Gretzky, we got to skate to where the puck is going to be. We don't need you just to skate where the puck is. We got to go where it's going to be because it's not going to be where it is now 10 years from now. And most of us in youth ministry are satisfied to say, you know, it worked for Doug before he wrote this book. Let's do that. But you better believe that by the time we read it, Doug's doing something else. He's kind of ahead of that curve. Okay, let's see if my... Okay, that's a nice one. But somehow this thing skips up to the next video. Y'all go ahead and enjoy yourself for just a second. We're doing the auto recovery process. Okay. We're just going to go straight to the crisis of capacity. In our work with churches, what we've discovered is that there's a pretty clearly defined cost for youth ministry. Like if you push a beach ball down under the water, it tends to always come back to the same level. When you're doing youth ministry, it tends to, you know, like a builder, we would say it's going to cost a certain amount per square foot. Now, there's some variety there, but basically, it's helpful to know what you can sustainably build and what it costs in terms of dollars, staff, volunteers. And so we just want to share with you some, you know, over doing this with a couple hundred churches, we sort of found these norms. All right, I'll whip through all six of them and then we'll talk about them, okay? Or interrupt me if you want. The first one is about $1,000 a kid. So this is how many kids do you have active on an average week? If your church has 50 kids active on an average week, you can count on the fact that you take your salary, benefits, and your program budget, it's going to settle somewhere around this $1,000 a kid. So this is not how many kids are on your rolls or how many different ones you touch in a month, but on an average week, about $1,000 a kid. Now, the truth is, in a rural context where you're the only show in town, you can probably do it cheaper than $1,000 a kid. If you're in downtown Chicago and you're, a church on Madison, Michigan Avenue, downtown Chicago, it's probably going to be more like $1,500 a kid. People have to ride the train to get it. It's a little more difficult. But it's helpful to kind of have that range, just ballpark about $1,000 a kid. So, the way you do the math, just add up everything your church is investing. This is not what your kids raise with bake sales. This is what your church is investing. Divide that by your weekly average number of kids. You're going to get about $1,000. The next one is about a 1-to-50 ratio. One full-time staff person to 50 active kids. So if your church hopes to have 25 kids active on an average week, how many staff do you need? You need about a half-time person. You probably don't need a full-time person. You can get about the same result from a full-time person as you can a half-time person, with some exceptions that we're about to get to. The next one is the 10% rule. Generally, you can see the attendance in a youth ministry to settle around 10% of the worshiping congregation. So if the church has 500 in worship, you probably have about how many kids coming? About 50. And this is not just kids coming to a single setting of the youth group. So you might have 25 that come Sunday morning, a whole different 25 that come Sunday night. That's 50. But if you've got 50 coming on Sunday morning and the same 50 coming on Sunday night, it's still 50. Does that make sense? So how many different kids are we reaching on an average week? About 10% tends to be normal. The 20% ceiling is fascinating. What we discovered was, if we're investing in the dollars, which almost always means increasing staff, 80% or so or more of your budget probably ought to go to staff. If we're increasing these two, you can grow from that 10 to 20% pretty naturally. It's almost predictable. So if your church says, we've only got 250 in worship, but we'd like to grow to 50, then hiring a full-time staff person makes sense because you'd like to have 50 kids. You're going to hire aspirationally. But once you get to 20%, the fascinating phenomenon that we have not figured out yet, we just observed, is that after 20%, it's like the Bermuda Triangle. It's not like you can keep throwing money and staff at it and it'll grow beyond the 20%. Some of your churches have this desire to say, we got 300 in worship, but we want to have 200 kids in youth group. Well, there may be some model. I mean, Bill Hybels did it. I mean, Bill Hybels had a group of 1,400 and a church of 300 or something like that. And then it became its own church, right? But generally, you're going to hit a ceiling at about 20%. Not that you can't go beyond it, but we have not been able to observe enough churches that are beyond that 20% to get a reason why. The ones we have observed tend to have a few things in common. Either they are the only show in town, like they are the community youth ministry. So parents and leaders from other churches actually serve in the ministry because it's really the only place in town. One church we worked at really was the only church in town. And they had, they had like 40% of their worshiping congregation come to youth group. But it was the only church that had a youth group. Actually, the only church in the college town, right? Then the next one is about a 1-to-5 principle, 1 volunteer to 5 active kids. I have a friend that says he can tell how many kids he's going to have at the end of the year by taking the number of volunteers he has for high school and multiplying by 5. And at the end of the year, he'll have about that number involved. Now, some people say, well, you know what that means is we just need to get more volunteers. But if you don't have enough staff to manage the volunteers, what you'll have is absolute chaos. And some of you have seen this, where you get a volunteer who is over empowered. You know what I'm talking about? Where this is my mission trip and nobody's going to touch my, I know we can only take 6 kids, but we always go to Kentucky and we paint that seminary down there. That's what we, right? So these two have to go together. The staff and the volunteers. If you don't have staff to coordinate, empower, and focus your volunteers, you're herding cats. It's like lemmings running after each other. And then the last one, fascinatingly enough, is the rule of 30. There we just noticed it's not a ceiling quite like the 20%, but there is a speed bump at about 30 kids. So maybe you've observed this. where a group can grow to about 30, and sometimes I'll stretch up to 40, 45, have a big event, and then I'll slide back down to about 30, maybe down to 25, but they'll sort of settle at about 30. Here's how it played out in our ministry. I've been in my church since 1986, so a while. And yeah, give me a walker. And when I first got there were 30 kids in the youth ministry. And I had 30 kids coming on a pretty regular basis. Church of 2,000, 30 kids in the youth ministry. You'd think maybe we could do a smidge better. I did everything, you know. Well, I thought I did everything, you know, like, okay, we're going to be more spiritual. No, we're going to be more fun. No, we're going to be more spiritually fun. No, we're going to have more. We would try to make every, you know, we're going to use this video. We're going to have more home groups instead of church. We tried all kind of different formats. And you know what would happen is we'd trade which kids came, but it wouldn't really change the number of kids coming. It's like there was a lifeboat, and when one person new got in, and one of the other people jumped out. There just wasn't enough capacity. Then we did this, you know, I know you're going to think I'm radical. After 5 years there, I divided the youth group into junior high and high school. I know, crazy. I was sort of thinking, you know, I need to kind of grow this thing up to 40 kids so I have a critical mass, because I really have more junior high kids than high school, and I thought, I got to get more high school kids here before I'm going to... But I went ahead and did it. You know, I'm trying anything. Throwing spaghetti against the wall, maybe something will stick. So we divided junior high and high school, and within a year and a half, we had 30 and 30. And we rode that baby for 6 or 8 years. Again, you know, I'm always kind of in the laboratory. What am I going to do? What can happen? You know, pretty steady. We're doing some creative stuff, but really, in terms of capacity, it's about the same. Then, 6 or 8 years after that, we said, you know, we're going to divide the group. Let's try it, dividing it grade by grade. So every grade, the seventh grade's got their own summer trip, they got their own youth leaders, they got their own small group, they're doing their own thing. Every grade's their own thing, which has some, you know, it's not perfect, but we're going to try it. So, and the senior class, like we had two kids. And people are going, this is the stupidest idea, and I'm thinking this is the stupidest idea I've ever heard, but you know, we're just throwing stuff against the wall. So, sure enough, within 2 years, we had 30, 30, 30, 30, 30. And it probably took 5 years to get the high school class, the senior class, to be 30. But basically, every class sort of hit that. It's like we had enough seats in the lifeboat. Now, I give you these things not as a prescription. It's more like gravity. You just ought to work around them. You need to understand if you jump off a building, there's stuff going to happen. And now, some of these rules get broken. Let me give you a couple examples. When you have a superstar youth worker, the superstar youth worker can sometimes outperform these norms. And they can inflate a ministry which totally collapses when they leave. And usually leaves it worse off than when they got there. They don't necessarily grow the ministry. The other is, if you've got a Jesus-sized youth group, right? Jesus had 12 in his youth group, right? If you've got a Jesus-sized youth group, you can probably do it cheaper than this. It may not be sustainable because you're doing it primarily with volunteers. But if you've got a great volunteer that's hanging in there for 5 years... You can do it cheaper than this. Mark Iaconelli says this great line. He says, if you got a group of 12 kids and none of them understand your illustrations and one of them wants to kill you, you got a group just like Jesus. I kind of like that. Okay, let's take a breath. You want to knock this around a little bit? Yeah. Exactly. So it's 20% of the worshiping congregation, not the membership. So if your congregation has, and maybe in Baptist churches, it might even be your Sunday school congregation. Kind of depends on, or your small group population, whichever you're going by. But basically 20% of the active weekly, your weekly active involvement of the whole church. You're going to hit a ceiling at about 20% of that number. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if there is...
That's interesting.
And I'm wondering if that is part of what's leading to this churches because Christian faith, or if it's the other way around and there's another way to place that. I've done that.
Yeah, I would think there's a social intimacy capacity. In other words, you can know the name. Almost everybody can know 30 people's names. You get much beyond 30. And even if you spend a year with them, they're going to be people that don't know each other. But if you got about 30, and so I think what my theory is that in a youth group, there is a sense of, I want to belong, I want to be known. And if it gets too big, they don't feel like they're being known, so they're going to bail this one to go to a smaller place where they feel known. And sometimes a larger ministry can have many more outlets for those small places to be known. So it's not a matter of how large the whole ministry is, but it's that group of 30. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, there's a book. Come on. There's a book on small groups written by the folks that are at the Journey Church. And anybody know this book I'm talking about? It'll come to me as soon as we're done. But essentially what they recommend is you want to get a small group that sort of moves up toward about that 30 number of people in the group, knowing that, you know, some of them are not going to show every now and then, but there's enough capacity for about, as opposed to this more, you know, we're going to show our underwear in the third week, okay? I just want y'all to know. I mean, this is deep. We're going to go deep. But more of just a place to be known, a place where transparency and intimacy can happen. Anything else about this? Yeah. So you got about 150 in worship, and you got about 30 kids.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah.
My counsel would be, kind of depends on what my counsel would be to follow the lead of your senior pastor. But my counsel would be, you got a great group. It's right at your capacity. You're at the ceiling. The bucket is full, and you can spend a whole lot of energy trying to get over that threshold, or you can spend that same amount of energy just pouring into the kids God's given you. That would be my counsel. Now, if your senior pastor has a vision for it to grow, then if he doesn't or she doesn't, yeah.
I'm sort of where he is in terms of the 20% rule, but we're at 60. We can split that, because I mean, that would make more sense, I would say, just to sustain the 30 and 30.
Mm-hmm.
Fear, I guess, that because we have 60, because we're at a 20% ceiling, that's pretty much how things are going to get right now, that we may just...
Yeah. Has it kind of leveled there for a while?
Yeah, it's kind of plateaued. It went from about 20 to 60 in about a year.
Yeah.
And so, very fast growth for me, and I really don't know how to sustain it. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, good. Oh, yeah. Cool. Well, we're about to get to that. It's good. So, you know... so much of this stuff is just experimenting. And if you're feeling like it's working with your 60 and your one group, you got to manage how much energy you've got, and can you duplicate your programs? Do you have the volunteer capacity to have the same quality programs? But if you're feeling like, okay, it just feels like once I'm gone, this baby's not going to be able to sustain at that octane level, then you may just want to... And what I'd recommend is an evolutionary process, you know, in these 6 weeks before Easter, we're going to try something different. We're going to put the junior high kids here and the high school kids here and see what... And you're not like announcing we're going to make a big change. You're just going to try it and see what happens. That way, if it doesn't work, then they expect you to go back anyway. But at least it gives you a little laboratory to try it out. Okay, the other dynamic of stuck churches is this superstar mentality, which we've hinted at. I just stole a couple things off of different websites, job postings. Build a dynamic, life-changing ministry to teens in our church and in the surrounding community. Don't just disciple our kids, but change the world. Which, of course, we all long to do, but let's do it part-time. Okay? All right. Yeah. Now, this is a little video that we don't have time to watch, but when most people think about what a youth pastor's like, they think about this one. It's called Youth Pastor Rap, and you can Google it. It's awesome. Ends with the awkward side hug. So we're not going to watch that now because we only have 20 minutes left. So what we want to do is move from thinking about the stuck approach, which really is pretty program-centered and youth pastor-centered, and let's think about a systems approach. How do we not just focus on Chris's excellent oral hygiene and focus on the whole system? A mediocre system that works is better than having a single superstar. Okay? So when we think about systems, let me just give you a quick. This is actually a true story. My wife and I have had this, well, we've been married 32 years, but in the first 10 years, we had this ongoing battle. And that was all surrounding my lateness. I'd call from the church, and I'd say, I'm on my way home. She'd say, okay, I'm going to get the kids ready. We live 6 minutes from church, so I'm on my way home. Well, of course, as I'm walking to the car, what happens? A kid needs me, they're in crisis, you know, a parent is really in trouble, and I follow the calling that I've been given and love them in Jesus' name and spend 45 minutes. This is before cell phones, okay? So the wife is going, that is a bad idea, honey. I don't care. I don't care about what calling you got. So I'm home, and I'm a little bit buoyed up because, you know, I've had this incredible ministry thing in the parking lot. It's awesome. And I come in, and unfortunately, my wife is not totally into the thrill of that, what has happened. And it's sort of ice, baby. And we have a little dinner, and it's, you know, side order of tension is there. The kids kind of are looking like, well, what's going on, Mom and Dad? Y'all are acting funny. Okay, so this goes on for about 10 years. Just once a month or so, but pretty regularly, at least once a month, I'm late for something. And so in family systems theory, there's a difference between content thinking and systems thinking. Content thinking is the topic about which we're battling. Systems is the way we're doing it. So what's the content issue? My lateness. Okay, so we would have these meetings. Susan and I would sit down and have these meetings about how we can solve this problem. The focus was all on the issue, right? And it was really putting a little fissure in our marriage. And in fact, I would come home, and if I was late, I was starting to get bowed up, you know, and I'd kind of get self-righteous, and I was ready for the battle. I'm kind of sick of this. You know what? It's not like I'm catting around or wasting money. It's not like I'm going out drinking. I'm just doing God's work, okay? Woman, squaw, okay? And you can imagine how that played by the time I got in the house. So, I don't know if y'all are familiar with the Greek word ambush, but Susan planned a one-woman intervention. And 10 years into this deal, after multiple attempts at focusing on the content, Susan, the family systems thinker, I walk in the door, and usually she's just in the kitchen just being ice cold, and, you know, when I'm late, she's just kind of, you know, ice cold and steamy at the same time. And I walk in the door, and she immediately attacks me. She comes straight to the door, and this is a little unusual, she comes straight to the door, and she wraps me up, gives me a big bear hug, whispers something flirtatious in my ear, and plants a big sloppy kiss on me. Now, wives, let me tell you, if your husband's doing this, you have just won. And so I play with it. I'm not even going to talk about the fact that I'm late. We're not going to the content issue. I'm just thinking, well, as long as this lasts, I'm going to go with it. Let's see what happens. So we have a nice dinner and a nice night, and the next morning, as I'm leaving, I say, honey, I just wonder, what was that thing last night? And she says, well, I just realized that I was allowing your lateness to control the whole climate of our home. And I realized I had a whole lot of power to change that, and I think it worked pretty good. What family systems theory says is a non-anxious, detached, playful presence has more power to change a system than focusing intently on the system.
You said that part again.
the What Susan was doing was interrupting a pattern, a dance, a system that was in place, and making it, taking the focus off of a content issue that had become chronically stuck. And so family systems theory, folks, just think about addictive behavior that you know. In an addictive family, where is all of the focus? On the addict, right? Everybody's dancing around the addict. You call it enabling. All the attention is, how can we get the addict to change? Family systems theory says, no, change yourself and stay connected. The addict will change. Or that's your best chance for the addict changing. And Susan found that very powerful place. And I think youth ministry desperately needs to find that powerful place of recognizing we have a lot of power to architect the culture of our churches, or at least of our youth ministries. We're not the victims of those things. Okay, we're going to... a lot of times I think we focus on our skill as dancers or as skaters, and we really are maybe missing a key piece of what we got to have in place. Did you get that? Most youth ministry seminars are focused on the skater, not the ice. Focused on the dancer, not the dance floor. You are trained how to be a dancer, not how to build a dance floor. And unfortunately, it doesn't matter how great your triple sow cow is. If the ice is thin, you're toast. Maybe I'm mixing my metaphors there, but you get the idea. So we're going to talk about building that dance floor. Whoops. Come on, baby. When we talk about sustainability, we're really talking about two components, two A words. The first one is architecture. That's the physical stuff, like job descriptions, a directory, calendar, goals, the stuff you can hold in your hand, okay? That's the architecture. Most of us in youth ministry, we got into youth ministry because we wanted to hang out with kids. We didn't get into youth ministry because we wanted to be a freaking administrator. Let me give you a little piece of news. If you want to hang out with kids, don't be a youth pastor. You'll have more time by having a real job, and you can be a volunteer. As a youth pastor, your primary job is to empower and equip the saints for the work of ministry. Your job is to work with the adults and build the structure so that kids have enough adults in their lives. The problem is most youth pastors only know how to be camp counselors. They know how to lead a small group and disciple kids, and they are the best at discipling kids in their whole church. That's problematic. If we're doing our job well, the coach of the team doesn't have to be better than the quarterback. In fact, you want a quarterback that's better than you. I know I can tell by your expression, you're thinking, what the heck am I doing in this seminar? I want to go hear Jim Burns. Our job is to build the architecture so kids can be surrounded by a constellation of relationships with adults. Part of the reason we don't have time to recruit volunteers is because we're so busy spending time with kids. And it's great that we love spending time with kids, and I think we should, and of course, as youth pastors, we're always going to spend time with kids. It's just part of the gig. But I kind of see my role at my church as the designated hugger. I'm not the disciple maker. I don't even have a small group anymore, as sad as that is. I high-five kids, and I meet with the adults like crazy. I build the system so that there are enough adults surrounding all the kids. The second piece is alchemy. Now, this is a little harder. And I believe this one has to come first, actually. This is the climate or the spirit of the ministry. It's the feel. You know how when you walk into a room, you can feel it? Like when we walked in before you know, there were just like 10 of us here. When we first walked in, remember how it felt? Awkward, kind of silent. Nobody could say hello. I mean, nobody was really talking to anybody. And if anybody did, it was sort of like one of those banquets where you hear every clink of the silver. And it's just sort of that. But after we've been hanging out together a little bit, we've told some stories, it's a different feel in the room, right? We actually can architect alchemy. Here's my metaphor for that. Build a greenhouse. When you're building the greenhouse, what is that, architecture or alchemy? Yeah, it's architecture, but it has an alchemic? Yeah, it's got an input. But it really is architecture. You're building something. You build the greenhouse so that you can control the climate inside. And in our youth ministries can do that even in a toxic church environment. You ever heard somebody say, or you may have said yourself, how can I possibly build a healthy youth ministry when the church is so toxic? Build you a greenhouse in the middle of the desert and people will be drawn to it because people are always drawn to life and health. They'll want to come. And then it becomes this island of viral health will begin to sneak out into the rest of the church. The more we focus on building that we do have control over, the less we feel victimized by the chaos of the church. Now, at what percentage of churches would you say are dysfunctional? 100%. Okay, let's just be clear. Every church has got dysfunction. They got crazy people. They got power-hungry people. They got evil hiding. I mean, Scott Peck said, churches are one of the safest place for evil people to hide. It happens. So let's just recognize that, but we have the power to architect our climate. I'm going to give you an example. Stand up. I want you to wander around the room, and I want you to greet each other as if there were somebody more important in the room that you were trying to get to. Go. Hey, how are you? Yeah, no.
Hi, how are you?
So.
How's it going?
Hey, good. Okay. Okay, freeze where you are. Now this time, okay, first of all, tell me how'd that feel? What was the climate like there? Felt like Sunday morning. Fair enough. Okay, how else? What did it feel like?
I didn't meet anybody.
Okay, you didn't really meet anybody. It was a little bit rushed, pretty fast. Interesting, isn't it? We were going really fast, but it wasn't energetic, but it was fast. Sort of tired speed. Interesting, okay. This time I want you to do the same thing, except greet the people you greet as if this is your best friend that's just come off the plane from Afghanistan. They've been gone for 2 years, and they made it. Go. Okay. What? How did that one feel?
Awkward.
Okay, you're hugging strangers. How'd that work for you? Okay. Okay, it was sort of slow energetic. There was a little bit of silliness involved. There was some smiling involved. And even though you knew I was manipulating you into doing this, we changed the feel of the room. Right? You actually have the power to, through the things you do with kids and the structures you put in place, to create climate. Again, I hope you're getting this message. I believe we don't have to be victims. We can be architects. We can architect culture. We can architect climate. Okay, sit down. Tell the person you hugged, I'm sorry I touched you inappropriately. You didn't? I didn't brush my teeth, but I did take a shower. Okay. Now, let me just speak sort of broadly about those two areas because we won't be able to get through them all the way. We're going to talk a little bit about the kind of people you need on your team as you're building your youth ministry team. And I also, let me just give you, you know, we got about 5 minutes or 6 minutes left. So I just want to give a 30,000 foot look of this alchemy and architecture. In changing your climate, I'm going to give you four quick ways to change your climate. Okay? I'm not going to give you PowerPoint. I'm just going to give them to you quick. If you want to see, let's say your church is a place that nobody volunteers, all right? And you want to say, I got to change that. Now, let me tell you. Well, I'll come back to that. The first thing is you trust the process. You know that if you work the process, you can change it. And you are non-anxious and playfully joyful. You're speaking the future into being. When my pastor came to our church, 6 months after he got there, he got up in front of the congregation and said, just excited to let you guys know that soon you're going to be the most generous church in the state of Tennessee. We're going to give more money away to missions than any other church in the state of Tennessee. I just wanted you guys to know. Now, we were nowhere close to that, but he just spoke it, right? And he just, because he knew what he was doing, he knew he could make it happen. And so, but just trusting the process. Some of you feel like, you know, I just don't know what to do about getting volunteers. I just can't get volunteers. Here's the deal. I got a $20 bet for you. If you can't, if you'll work my 6-step process to get volunteers, which I'll share with you afterwards if you want it, I'll send you $100. If you work this process and it doesn't work and you can't get all the volunteers you need, I'll send you $100. Okay? Just putting that out there. Okay, but we're not going to talk about that because we don't have time. So trust the process. I know what the process is for recruiting volunteers, and it just freaking works, and I don't freak out when people tell me no, because I know the process works. Secondly, we deliver some results. When you play football, you know if you're winning by the score. Here's the great thing about ministry. If the arrow hits something, all you have to do is draw a bullseye around it. You don't have to. It's not like somebody said, it's not just about getting more kids in, or it's not just about getting more leaders or having more trips. If something works, you go, woohoo, look at there. We did it. Isn't that awesome? So it may be last year we had 2 volunteers. This year we got 4. Awesome. Whatever thing is, if you deliver some kind of results. So much more we can talk about this. The third thing is you embrace stories and metaphors as a way to change the culture. People in Hollywood say, he who tells the best stories controls the culture. You get to decide what stories you're going to tell. And by the stories you tell the rest of the... Now, here's a story in your church bulletin. Announcement. There will be no more youth group until we get enough volunteers. We have asked for 6 months now, and we do not have volunteers, and so we'll be canceling youth group until further notice. Thank you for your support. That's a story, right? The story is this is a church that doesn't care about kids. The story you tell is the story you're going to get. You keep telling that story, you're going to keep not getting volunteers. You can pick, though, the stories you're going to tell. And so if you want to change that culture about volunteers, you identify something that awesome that has happened. You know, Ms. Johnson here, she's not a regular youth group leader, but this past week she brought lasagna. And you know what was really cool is I noticed that while she was serving that lasagna, there's this quiet little girl that hardly ever comes that just was totally in her element because Ms. Johnson was there standing with her. It was awesome. Okay, just a little story. You slide that story into your senior pastor's pocket. You give your senior pastor a story every week. It's going to show up in a sermon every now and then. Your congregation's going to get it, right? We can be selective about our metaphors and our stories. And the last thing is having some rituals and traditions. Like when you send your kids out on a mission trip, gather them together in front of the congregation. Let the congregation pray over them. Or have some silly, I'll bet if we had time, you guys all have goofy things you do in your youth ministry that are just uniquely weird to your ministry. When I grew up in Waco, Texas, our goofy thing was we talked British in our youth group. I don't know why. We just did. Maybe we'll have some tacos tonight. Yes, we will. I love tacos. Yep. Don't know why. Okay, so in sustainable youth ministry, talk about that in a whole lot more detail. And I think it's a whole seminar to talk about how to transform culture. But just, I want you to leave empowered knowing that you can be the architect of culture. So I think there are 3 folks we want to have on our team. You want to have the construction worker. This is the skilled craftsman. So in ministry, what are some of the, well, on a building site, what are some of the skilled craftsmen you need? A brick mason, carpenter, electrician, plumber. You get the idea, right? They all have particular skills. In youth ministry, what are some of the particular skills you need? What are the craftsmen you need, craftspeople? You need teachers, musicians, fun people, sound people, web people, people that can relate to kids, creative program. You get the idea. What a church usually does is hires a construction worker and then they're amazed that the construction worker is not a general contractor. But if you try to build a new building with just a plumber, you're in trouble. And most churches say, that guy really relates to kids and he loves Jesus. Both. What else could we want? So the second kind of person we got to have is a construction foreman, somebody, a 4-person, right? Somebody who manages the flow of work. When we have a choice of hiring only one kind of staff person in a church, we're going to go after a construction foreman. Somebody's got to manage the flow of work and empower other people to do their jobs and get them there. If you're on a work site and you hang the sheetrock before you put the plumbing in, it's going to take you about five times longer, right? You lay the concrete before you put the plumbing in, you're in real trouble. But often nobody's watching this ball because we're hanging out with kids and answering our email, going to staff meeting, planning Sunday night's program. Somebody's got to manage all the volunteers and take responsibility for recruiting and empowering and training all those volunteers. A construction worker. I know that's a shift in identity for many professional youth workers. Most of them see themselves as construction workers. My word for construction worker typically is volunteer. The labor is somebody who does a specific task, does the website, or they, you know, in some churches you can afford to pay somebody, but generally this is the person that keeps it all flowing, and it usually is the one that churches don't hire. And then the last one, of course, is the architect. The architect is the one that designs the plan that the construction foreman follows. And then the architect identifies, we need this many people teaching Sunday school, we need this many volunteers in youth group, we need this many small group leaders, we need this kind of band, whatever it is. Then the construction foreman actually implements that. Most churches hire either a laborer or an architect, and they forget that middle piece. And even and these can all three be volunteers in a smaller church. But we just found it really helpful to know that we need all three of those different kind of gifts. Yeah. You mean that the senior pastor or the people writing the job description are the architects? Yeah. And we would hope. But typically, those job descriptions all look like photocopies of each other. And so it's not like there's a specific vision. Really, the job description is keep work off of my desk. And if I don't have to worry about the youth ministry, you're doing your job. And if I have to worry about the youth ministry, you're in trouble. And so a specific vision like, we'd like to grow by 20%, or we want to be the church that is uniquely, those sorts of things often have to be crafted for us to do. Well, we've kind of reached the landing point. I want to do one last video for you, and then we're going to pray, and then we'll stay and talk about whatever you want to talk about, because then it's your time. Here we go.
Family. Herding cats, don't let anybody tell you it's easy. Anybody can herd cattle. Holding together 10,000 half wild short hairs, well, that's another thing altogether.
Being a cat herder is probably about the toughest thing I think I've ever done.
I got this one this morning right here, and if you look at his face, it's just ripped to shreds, you know.
You see the movies, you hear the stories, I'm living a dream. Not everyone can do what we do.
I wouldn't do nothing else.
It ain't an easy job, but when you bring a herd into town and you ain't lost a one of them, ain't a feeling like it in the world.
Let's pray. Lord, we do long to be the kind of leaders that don't lose a one of them. Oh, we know you have given the precious gift of a generation into our hands. And you've given us just a handful of them to worry about. So, Lord, we pray that we would be faithful in these few years we get to have them, that we'd surround them by a great cloud of witnesses and launch them into adulthood with a sticky faith that breathes in and bears the aroma of Christ to a world that needs you. And we love you and we're grateful in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank y'all. Blessings on your heads. Go have lunch.
You mind mailing that PowerPoint to me, or is that?
Yeah. If would you have you don't have a jump drive, do you?
No.
That'd be no. Okay. Yeah. Let me give you my email address.
Sure.
And you just email me and ask for it, and I'll think I've got, yeah, there we go. And yeah, I'll be happy to send it to you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to ask for like an email where you,
yeah,
if you can do, if I could send you something for the volunteer thing or whatever.
Absolutely. There you go, man.
I won't take your money. I just,
yeah. Sure, man. Awesome. Deliver results.
Okay. Are you on Facebook?
I am on Facebook. You'll be my friend, my boxing friend.
Thank you very much,
Jacob. Good to be with you, brother.
Thank you.
Well, I'll trade you. Hey, Steve. Thanks,
Steve,
brother.
I'm the youth director of Huntsville.
Yeah, baby.
Neighbor, yeah.
Now, do you know my my buddy Tony Akers? He's at Trinity Methodist.
That name sounds really familiar.
He's a rock star.
Really?
Yeah, he's been there, I'll bet going on 10 years now, and he's...
Is he the guy who's sort of in charge of, I think I've heard about this, I should get more involved, but there's like a Huntsville-wide, maybe even north in Alabama, youth director sort of support group.
Tony Akers, he's an awesome guy. He's about, probably 40 now.
That's way too old for a youth director. No, I'm just kidding.
He used to, when he was up here in Bowling Green, you know, an hour and a half south of here.
Yeah.
He would drive down to Nashville. We did barbecue together. And he heard me give a talk on having a spiritual director. And he walked up to me after the talk. I never met him.
Oh, my gosh.
Afterwards, and he said, I think I want you to be a spiritual director.
Here's my card.
he would drive down from...
No way.
He would drive down from Bowling Green.
Oh, my gosh.
He barbecued and talked about his home.
Oh, my gosh. Well, do you know my friend Leslie Manning?
Oh, gosh. He's my hero.
She's my hero, too. That's we're sad to lose her at the diocese, you know, doing the youth work there. But,
yeah.
It's good. Yeah. She's up in Tennessee now, though, of course.
Yeah, she's just fine. Yeah. I saw her. Actually, I did a thing, you know, the diocese had this training school.
Oh, yeah?
It was like, you know, you sign up and you do this two-year training.